Welcome to Superpower State of Mind with me, Marlin Anderson. I'm so happy to have you listening to my brand new podcast, so thank you. This podcast is all about hearing from incredible people, the incredible journeys they've been on, and how they found light and inspiration in some of the most traumatic and dark moments of their lives. Today's guest made her name on Channel 4's Hollyoaks over a 20 plus year period before seeing her contract ended for setting up an OnlyFans account and arguably taking control over her image. Yes, I'm delighted to be speaking to Sarah Jane Dunn. Now for me, I had a set idea of what OnlyFans is. Some of you listening now might not have any idea at all. So Sarah takes us through what OnlyFans is, why she joined, and how it led to cutting ties with Hollyoaks. With everyday life around her whilst recording, listen out for Sarah's dog. We also chat about childhood, early acting days, and so much more. Please do hit follow or subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Let's get to Sarah Jane Dunn on Superpower State of Mind. So I'm going to jump into the deep end because I'm all about empowering females and women. And I thought, I'm going to get Sarah on. I need Sarah. Because I remember watching you on Hollyoaks. And when I heard about the OnlyFans thing, I was like, come on, girl. And I thought, you know what? This is brilliant that you're raising awareness about something that isn't in the norm as well, because I don't know much about OnlyFans. Yeah. So could you just kind of enlighten me on the process of it, how it works, and for those that don't understand the format?
Yeah, so what I found about it was that a lot of people don't understand it. And I was one of those people. Like, so whenever I started looking into the platform, probably well over a year ago now, I was like, oh no, you know, I don't think this is for me. And I was literally going off hearsay, what I'd heard people talk about, or my sort of misconceptions of the platform. But basically it is... if you think of it as another social media platform, but yeah, it's sort of locked down. So a lot of the other platforms are doing this now, where like Instagram, you can have subscriptions. So yeah, if you're a verified user on Instagram now, you can set an area of your Instagram that is subscription only. So OnlyFans is sort of like that. So people will pay a monthly subscription for exclusive yeah content. They can message, and you can put basically whatever you want on there. The reason that the platform is over 18s is because there are users on there, there are profiles on there that have explicit content on there, yeah, there is porn on the site. So the platform is an over 18s to basically protect viewers and, you know, keep people that shouldn't be seeing certain types of content out. Yeah. So it's great for that. And actually, what I've really found about the platform is that it's a much safer space for a user, for someone setting up an account like myself. You can basically restrict accounts. I mean, you will have had this. Everyone's had this online where you get trolled, you get abusive messages, I was getting horrible messages on my Instagram in my inbox. And it's since those, I'd gone to the police about it. They couldn't do anything. I'd gone to Instagram about it. They just sort of ignored it. And, you know, I'd blocked the user. The user kept setting up new accounts. And so in the end, I just now don't go into my DMs on Instagram. I don't go there because I'm just like, if I don't see it. Whereas on OnlyFans, you know, I can restrict a user. They have their IP address. So once they're shut down, that's it. They're shut down.
Wow, interesting.
Which is great. You know, I can get them shut down completely. So that, it feels like a much safer space. And any pictures that are sent through on Instagram, then they're there. If you go in, that picture is, you know, there for you to see, isn't it? You have no option other than to not go into messages. On OnlyFans, pictures are all pixelated. So it's my choice if I want to open a picture or not. So you're much more in control. All your photos are copyrighted. So, you know, anything that is leaked, I can legally get those taken down. Again, on Instagram, I feel like, well, it is. Once you put a picture out there, it sort of belongs to the world, doesn't it? Anyone can use it. The tabloids can pick it up, take it out of context.
It's weird that Instagram haven't caught up with that, the whole IP address thing. You'd think, right, that they'd kind of copy that, because I know that if you make a fake account, you can keep making them and creating them and creating them. And there's no stop to it. I actually hired a private investigator because I was getting trolled so bad.
Did you?
Yeah, and I managed to get like an IP address, but they just don't do anything at all. And speaking of Instagram, I know you've quoted in one of the articles that I've read about you that you feel more empowered and in control of what you're putting out there.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I did a a spread with Cosmopolitan Mag this summer on body image. And there's no airbrushing. I'm nude, you know, implied nude. So I put it on my story and on my main feed. And within 3 minutes, it's been removed for explicit content, right? And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to re-upload it because I'm thinking no one's going to delete this. And then again, it's been reported. So these little twats on Instagram, whether they're trolls or if it is Instagram, I don't know how it quite works, kept reporting. So I couldn't even have that. And I had an image, it's literally of my C-section scar in its like wholest and raw, like raw form.
Yeah.
And there was nothing sexual about it. It was just my C-section scar. And I thought, this is absolutely crazy. So you've said about the airbrushing before and how you used to have that in magazines and stuff. When did it kind of begin for you?
Oh God, when I first started. So I started doing shoots, sort of like lads mags. I think the first one I remember, I was 17, so really young. I mean, and at the time, we were just expected to do them, and we were almost pitted against each other. So I was lucky in the era that I grew up on the show, when I was sort of at my busiest, I had a really nice group of girls and group of friends. But ultimately, you know, there was bitchiness and clickiness, and because we were sort of played off against each other a little bit. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, you know, you're doing this shoot, but you're not doing it. And then you get a complex going, well, why am I not doing it? Why have I not been chosen? Or why am I not on the cover of that? And so those images now, when I look back on them, and I remember doing the shoots and sort of looking at the images after, when they get sent through, and going, well, we've chosen this one, we're using this one for you. So there was never any sort of saying, you know, do you like this? Are you happy with this? And there's one, I need to dig them out actually, because it'd be interesting to look back through them and all the interviews and stuff that I did. But there's one where literally my stomach is just like shiny almost, because it's just been so tweed. There's another one where my boob's like a triangular shape. And I've got tiny boobs, like they've never been of volume or of a triangular shape either. But they did all of these things like enhancements, and you know, I think we're in a good place at the moment where people are being real and speaking out like yourself and going, this is what a body looks like. And these bit, you know, the flaws that the body has are not flaws at all. They're part of your journey. They're part of your story. They're beautiful. Like, we're all different. And we've been so conditioned to think a certain look is perfection, and that changes through the decades anyway. You know, I think 100%. Alex Light put up a picture recently, and it's like, if you go back to like 50s, 60s, 70s, like the ideal body shape is so different in each one. So how can we have a perfection, a version of perfection, when it changes so much anyway? So for me, it was really about sort of going, hang on a minute, like I'm quite happy with my imperfections, so. And I want to be real, and I try and be as real as possible on social media. So yeah, it was, for me, it was a really good place to go, well, actually, this is where I start with this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, when I was younger, it was all the kind of Kate Moss size zero thing, and that triggered so much mental health at the time, which obviously wasn't spoken about, eating disorders, etc. And when I kind of look back on that, when I was younger, I was only a kid. I was a teen. And the problem we have now is social media. So it can be really, really good for us, as you said, or it can be really, really damaging, because there's so much kind of fakery around and we don't know what is real or what is not. And so for the younger generation, I just get worried about them when they're looking at kind of the influencers and what they're posting out there, and whether they're still editing on these Facetune apps. So it's not the airbrushing anymore. We can do it from home, you know, on our phones.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like a catch-22. But one thing you just pointed out to me is quite interesting. You said, you know, when you were doing these lad mags, you felt kind of not in competition with your fellow like colleagues from the show. You felt like, oh, if they weren't getting a job and I'm not getting this, but they are, it kind of diminished your self-esteem and confidence. When I came out of Love Island, Jesus Christ, I felt like a piece of shit. Everyone was booking work. I wasn't booking anything. And I was thinking, is there something wrong with me? Don't I look right? I went and got surgery. I was literally comparing myself constantly to other contestants. And it was like an internal battle with my mind. And I think, I wonder why it has to be like that. it's really strange in this industry. And obviously it's a little bit different, reality TV, and you're an established actor, is completely different, but it's just really sad how it does work like that in the end. And we're constantly chasing what others have, or we're comparing ourselves. What would you say is kind of the best tip you could give to someone that feels like they're constantly comparing, and that, you know, they say comparison is the thief of all joy, but what would you say?
I think that it's really important to acknowledge that there's space for everyone. And like yourself, I'm really about empowering other women and supporting other women and men. But I think that it's such a difficult space for women in particular. And I think to sort of acknowledge that and go, look, by encouraging somebody else and applauding somebody else for what they're doing and for the great work they're doing, or for the courage that they're showing, or for the honesty that they're showing, you're not losing out on something yourself by doing that. And actually the feeling that that gives you, and I'm a great believer in sort of karma, and, you know, putting out like good and getting good back, and I think it's really important. And I think that's the way forward now, I think, to sort of, yeah. I mean, it's going to take time, isn't it? And I think as long as there's social media and there are these apps and there are people face-tuning, I mean, there's an actress that I know, and she's beautiful, and I'm not going to name names, but she will not put a picture up of herself without having used face-tune. And I know her, like, in real life, and I know that she's beautiful. And on her social media, she looks beautiful, but she's a different person. It's not her. Yeah. And she won't even put up a picture of herself now if it's not been tweaked.
It's like when I put a filter on, like Instagram story, I'm like, whoa, that's completely different.
But then
at one point I started getting used to it. And when I didn't have the filter, I was like, oh shit, I'm ugly. And then I was like, no, I'm not. I've just been used to like having this filter on.
This is it. And I think people get so used to seeing themselves, and we've got our phones all the time, and we can, you know, you can swipe up, you can add a filter. I'm guilty of putting a filter on, you know, if I've got no makeup on, or if I'm feeling a bit crappy, and I'll try and go, hang on, I don't need that on. But it's that comparison, like you say, you swipe through and you go, ooh, who's she? It's nothing like me. And I'm like, who is this like 20-year-old that's looking back at me? And I can see why people would get addicted to that. And I think that's why accounts like yourself, accounts like Vicky Patterson, and, you know, people out there with that profile and public eye can be really, really honest, because it's a really difficult world as it is, and it's a cruel world as it is, and I think it's 100%. So important to be able to go, look, that's not real, that's, you know, it's not it's just not real, it doesn't exist, it's a computer. It's like we're all computer generated. So I think people like yourselves and, you know, us supporting other people, I think, is really important, and that's definitely sort of the way to move forward.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Our mind is like our homes or our car. So if you think about it, we need to take care of it. What goes on in our heads impacts how we deal with everything in our lives. So like anything, it needs some TLC and looking after. I know that when I go to therapy, it helps unload loads of information that goes on in my mind. And instead, by speaking about it and not suppressing my thoughts and feelings, I feel so much better after talking. There are loads of ways you can help your mind. Exercise, reading, journaling, and there is also BetterHelp Online Therapy. BetterHelp Online Therapy is more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. BetterHelp offer video, phone, or even live chat only sessions. If you want to simply hear someone's voice and not see their face, there is absolutely no pressure to turn your camera on. Listeners to Superpower State of Mind get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Marlin. That's BetterHelp.com/Marlin. So for 10% off your first month of BetterHelp Online Therapy, go to BetterHelp.com/Marlin. So I'm going to kind of go get a bit deep now. I'm going to talk a bit more kind of like you and your mental health and kind of how you have felt over the years. So you left Hollyoaks. Do you think anything changed within yourself? Do you think it kind of kickstarted anything within you? Like, did it ignite a fire? Did you feel more free? Okay, I feel like I'm on the right path now. And did you gain more confidence from that?
Yes, now. When everything kicked off at work, I was sort of... So they went to the press with everything. So that wasn't my choice to be very open with what happened. And I probably wouldn't have done. In fact, I definitely wouldn't have done. I wouldn't have gone to the press and gone, oh, by the way, I've been fired and it's because of this. I think I would have probably just, you know, crawled into a bit of a hole and gone, okay, well, that's happened. And now what am I going to do with my life? And so actually it's the best thing that ever could have happened because it really pushed me out of my comfort zone. It forced me to, I was in fight or flight basically. So it forced me into fight mode because I wasn't ever going to go, oh no, I'm, you know, I, it's the first time I've ever really stood my ground and gone, no, actually, you can't tell me what to do. This is my body, my choice. I get to decide what I do with it. I get to choose how I move forward with this. And so I think that being put into that, forced into that sort of situation where I was like, right, okay, it's time to fight, actually did ignite something in me. And then the response that I got and the support that I got and the, you know, I didn't ever expect the sort of media frenzy that happened around it all. And even when it was happening, I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, why are people interested in what's happening with me? No one's ever shown any interest like this. And it wasn't until like people started messaging me and I started having more conversations. And I've got a wonderful life coach who has been with me for a few years now, and she, you know, she was in touch straight away and we had chats. And then I'd just found a therapist as well. And literally I had my first session with her, I think the week before it all happened.
Well, look, that's the timing from the universe, literally.
Yeah, literally. Because I'd been looking for someone for a while and I'd spoke to another therapist and, you know, you've got to find the right person, haven't you? And the other therapist was great, which just wasn't for me. And then I literally found my therapist and I was like, as this was all unraveling, so I was going into her every week going, oh, and offloading. And I think the biggest thing for me was actually, I realised that I didn't really know who I was, what my identity was and what I wanted and what my opinions were. I think because I'd spent so long on and off on the show, ultimately you're filtered, like both physically and verbally, because you're constantly thinking, right, well, I can't say that and I better not say that. And I can't, my opinion is this, but I better not say that because that won't, you know, align with what the channel's opinion is or the show's opinion is. And so I found myself sort of constantly going, actually, I'm not speaking truthfully and I'm not speaking from my heart. And so I think the biggest thing has been me going, actually, this has been a real journey for me to sort of find myself.
Isn't that crazy, though, that, you know, you've been acting for a long, long time, right? And you start to, you morph, not into somebody else, but as you said, you're not being your authentic, true self. And things don't align with who you really are just don't become a part of you. So it took something like this to reveal who you really are. And that kind of takes me to asking you a question, like, what were you like as a child? What was your childhood like growing up? Because they always say, you know, we all have inner child like inside of us. And there's this thing called inner child healing. There's a lot that I've done because what happens to us as children and what we witness and see, it kind of affects us as we're adults. And one big thing for me is I've had like therapy and whatnot and on a lot of things, as you know, when you're a kid and what you've seen. And you know, my mum was ill a lot of my like childhood, so that kind of stems in me being feeling alone a lot and getting kind of like scared at night and stuff like that. But in terms of not living authentically whilst kind of acting, because you can't in a sense, but it's morphed your personality, can you remember at one point where you felt like truly like yourself when you were younger? Do you remember?
I think this is probably a lot of it, is I started on the show when I was 14.
Wow, see, so that's mental.
I was a baby, yeah. And I think...
That's all you know, well, knew, basically.
Yeah.
Like acting and Hollyoaks.
That's it. And I think those years, all I remember from the very beginning up until probably being about 18 or 19 was... I was busy, which was great. I was filming a lot, but I was doing that. Then I was going to school and doing schoolwork. Then I was doing homework. Then I was learning lines again and going back to work. My mum, bless her, used to drive me to work, drive me to school. I had a good friend at school that used to make notes in lessons for me, so I had work to catch up on. And I think those, they're really formative years, those, aren't they? Like, you know, just become a teenager. And I think those are years where you are finding yourself and your identity, and you're having your first boyfriends or girlfriends or whatever. And actually, I was doing all of that alongside playing a character. And I think that's where it comes from, because I think I've just played a character for so long. Like within Hollyoaks, obviously, so I knew that character Mandy inside out, because really she's a big part of me. And then going from Hollyoaks to other jobs and playing other characters, I don't think I ever really stopped and went, oh, hang on. So there's all these characters and all these voices in my head, and there's all these sort of like backstories to these characters, and I'm sort of putting myself into their lives and emoting that. But actually, who am I?
You're now at a place in your life where you're finding Sarah, not Mandy, not other characters, and it's you. And I think that's so inspiring, because, you know, I think we all, I'm guilty of it. When I was on Love Island, I was trying to be somebody I was not. I've always been somebody else or someone else's expectation, and I never stopped to try and be me. And I think you're showing the world now that it's never too late. You can always be yourself regardless. And it's also really nice to hear that you're having therapy and you speak openly about it, because that's another thing people just don't talk about.
Yeah, and it's so important. And honestly, it's the best thing I've ever done. The life coach that I have, she sort of opened up my eyes to therapy, because, you know, we chatted and it was like a few little therapy sessions. My little boy was really poorly a few years ago, and it came off the back of that. She reached out to me, and I think this is where social media is great, because you can connect with amazing people. As much as there's horrible people out there, it's a wonderful space to connect with the right people. And, you know, I think, like you said, the universe does bring these things forward to you. I would always speak openly about it, because I think it's so important. And we spend so much time and money on our appearance and, you know, looking a certain way. And I'm really into my physical health, and that is really important. And for me, that also ties in with my mental health. Without training and exercise, it goes in hand for me. But we never talk about how important our mental health is. We spend so much time in our own heads, and we're so conditioned to think certain things, and, you know, we get so many things thrust upon us, and like we were just saying before about how you should look and how you should feel and what you should do, and it's so much pressure. Yeah. And so I think it's really important to know yourself, so that you can, you know, all these things will come at you, but you can manage them or filter them or do whatever you need to do, and always come back to you and what you want.
What tools have been your saving grace throughout? I know you said therapy is one. What does Sarah do on like a daily basis? Give me a bit of a routine, like just not just for your mental health, but for just coping with day-to-day life and stuff like that. I know you just said you exercise too, which is literally a game changer, because I only just started after I gave birth, and I was like, why have I missed out on this?
It's amazing, honestly. It's difficult, but it's so good. Yeah. And then whatever form of exercise you find that is good for you. I mean, I love that about exercise. There's so many different ways you can do it. You just have to find the one that suits you. But my routine is I'm pretty good with eating well. Like, and by well, I mean I eat. I never starve myself. I love food, but love I'm that. Lucky that my husband's a great cook. So he feeds us and he's great. I've got two dogs. My dogs like give me so much pleasure and love, and I couldn't be in a world without dogs. I would walk them. A lot of getting out in nature for me really works. Grounding, I absolutely love just standing on some grass in barefoot. I mean, that literally.
Hey, I love it. I have a tree in the garden, and I'm literally hugging it all the time.
Days. My husband came home a couple of weeks ago, and I was just lying on the grass, and he was like, "What are you doing?" I was like, "I just felt the urge to lie on the grass," and it just calms you, doesn't it? And it sounds so silly, but We are at one with nature, as cheesy as that sounds. We really are. I journal. I try and...
I was about to say that. Do you journal? That's one of my favourite things.
I love it. I mean, I was much better at it during lockdown, and life sort of caught up with me a bit again now. So I'm not as meticulous as I was with it. So, but I do still, if I feel the need to offload or just to untangle what's going on in my head, then I will journal and meditate. I love Yoga Nidra. Is like my go-to. I don't know if you've ever listened to like a Yoga Nidra meditation, but they're just the best. It's like it's sort of keeping your mind alert almost subconsciously, and then your body totally switches off. So you get into a really nice, relaxed state where you just concentrate on your breathing, you concentrate on the sounds around you, you put all your thoughts and everything to one side, and you set an intention. So, you know, you might say, the universe is bringing me amazing opportunities, or, you know, whatever your intention is, that you just sort of go with it. And I literally do that now. Every night I listen to one to go to sleep, because it just helps me switch off at the end of the day. Because otherwise I find that I'm constantly going, right, okay, this still needs doing, and I didn't get a chance to do that. And, you know, as life is.
I'm gonna have a little listen to that tonight, because I play like 10-hour long YouTube videos and affirmations at night and whatnot. But yeah, I'm a pretty heavy, deep spiritual person when it comes to things like that. I always think there's, you know, everything is in the mind. Like the mind is so, so powerful, and everything around us is created by our minds, right?
Yes, and definitely.
To get it into a place of stillness can be challenging, but it just changes the game once you can figure out how to meditate.
I'll send you the links.
Amazing. Just go back to body image really quickly. You were saying that you eat well, and then you kind of pause a little bit. I love that you said that, because one thing that I've kind of struggled with, I kind of was one of the first to introduce the kind of body positivity movement a few years ago during the beginning of lockdown. And I eat healthy. Like, I love avocado, salads, you know, I'll eat, you know, I don't eat a lot of meat, but fish and whatnot. But then I'll also eat kind of chocolate when I want to. And I feel like people kind of underestimate the power of healthy eating, and they almost kind of get triggered by it if I kind of talk about it now on socials. Because when I say I exercise and I eat well, they're like, oh, but you promote body positivity. And I'm like, but body positivity is that. It's being the best version of you, having the best health within you. Because when I eat well, my mind is a completely different state. Like, and if I was to eat at McDonald's, I know I'm going to feel crappy, and it just kind of lowers my vibe completely. But it was nice to hear you say that, because it's either all or nothing nowadays. It's either like, oh, body positivity, eat what you want, and, you know, just love yourself, which is cool. But to me, I think there's so much more to it.
Yeah, I definitely say that food is like one of the key things, again, that goes hand in hand with fitness and mental health. And, you know, essentially, whatever you put in your body is feeding off and fueling off. Yeah. And, you know, so a meat, like you said, salads and avocado and nuts and fish. Yeah. And I do eat meat. So like for me, you know, like a nice steak or all of those things, I can notice a massive difference when I'm eating well and healthily and, you know, nutritious food from the land. My mental state's better, I sleep better, I train better, my body heals itself better. And I'm fueling myself because I work hard in the gym, and I exercise, and it's important. I would never starve myself, because it's just, to me, I mean, and this is not knocking anyone, that I know that people have terrible times with eating disorders and mental health around that. And it's difficult for me to understand that, because luckily I have never been in that position. But I find it hard to sort of, for me, it's common sense to go, well, your body is working hard, and your brain and your, you know, your whole physical self needs fuel. And it's, you know, when people talk about brain food, and that's not just a saying, you know, you're giving all of the amazing nutrition in that food is fueling your body. And I hate it when, you know, people starve themselves. I don't like the word diet, so I would never say, oh, you know, I'm on a healthy diet, because I think that's a really toxic word as well. But yeah, it's key. Again, that's like, I love food.
Snap. Finally, I see that you've got a podcast with Rhianne Sugden, hosts. So it's the Hot and Bothered podcast, isn't it?
It is, yes.
And so you discuss taboo topics, is that correct?
We do. So me and Rhian met on, actually Rhian was one of the people that reached out to me when everything kicked off with work. And I really, you know, I got some lovely people reaching out that I'd never met, as well as people that I know, and being supportive. And I'm, like I say, again, women supporting women. And I'd never met Rhian, and she just sent me a really nice message with no sort of, she wasn't trying to get anything out of it. You know, she was just there sort of going, look, I hope you're okay. And then I reached out to her and said, should we meet up for a coffee? You know, we're both Manchester based. So we met up, and actually we clicked. We had a lot of people in common. A lot of our opinions were the same. She's been in the industry a long, long time. So we could sort of connect on that, and the way, again, that going back to like airbrushing and not being in control of images. And obviously she's on the OnlyFans platform as well. And then we did a shoot together, and it was on the shoot. I'd already got my podcast sort of ready to go. And it had changed a couple of times due to different circumstances. And again, sort of, I feel like the universe was going, it's not quite the right time yet. Like, this isn't meant to be this way. And then me and Rhian were sort of did a shoot, and she just sort of went, oh, would this make a really good podcast cover? And so as soon as I left the shoot, I rang my manager and I was like, how do we feel about getting Rhian on board? Like, I think it would be great. And because we're both on the platform, I think it would be really good to have honest, open conversations about sex, about any sort of taboo topic that is frowned upon. And that goes back to what you were saying about your images being taken down and, you know, being shadow banned for things like that. On one of the episodes, we were chatting about, did you see the Adidas campaign? With all the women's torsos, basically. And it got taken down. And then there's another...
Wasn't that about boobs? Or have I got that wrong?
It was boobs, yeah. It was just... And now that had been male torsos, that wouldn't have been an issue. But for some reason, you know, women's boobs are offensive. And then there was another one. There's a great charity called the Eve Appeal. You've probably heard of them. And it's a gynecological charity. So they, you know, raise awareness about gynecological cancers. And they put up basically a cartoon picture of the female anatomy and pointed out like where the vulva was, where the vagina was. So that, you know, a lot of people don't know the anatomy of a woman. Women don't know the anatomy of a woman. And it was really important. It was sort of flagging signs to look out for that might, you know, suggest that you need to probably get it checked out. And it got taken down, and it was a cartoon picture, and it was informative, and it was... And then, like, there are pictures out there that you just go, but how is that not allowed? But then this is okay, you know, that it's just crazy. I don't really understand who is in charge of that sort of side of things at Instagram.
No, but I think that's amazing that what you've done. Obviously, you've come off of a show. You've kind of gone, gosh, what do I want to do? You figured out what you wanted to do with yourself and career-wise, but now you're also raising awareness through it. I think that's amazing.
Yeah,
because, you know, not many people do that. It's so important to speak about topics that are either frowned upon or like not spoken about. And I've got a little girl, obviously, when she's older, I want her to be empowered, which leaves me asking with a bit of a controversial question. What would you say to like younger girls that want to join OnlyFans? Would you recommend it? I'm talking like late teens, 18 plus.
So for me, obviously, I already had a platform, I had a following. I've done the sort of shoots that I do on OnlyFans, I've done all my life. I'm really comfortable with it. I'm comfortable with my body. I know that I've been subjected to sort of the trolls and all of that. And I know that I'm a strong enough person that I'm okay with that. I would sort of say, I mean, it's your body. This is the thing. And I've been asked this question before. And I think my answer is always, it's your body. You get to decide what you do with that and what you're comfortable with. And if you want to, you know, use OnlyFans as a platform to do sexy images, and you're comfortable with that and you know your boundaries and you know that you won't feel pressured into doing anything more than you're comfortable with, then yeah, why not? As long as you're of an age that, you know, I'd say no younger than 18, obviously.
Yeah. No, I love that answer. That's brilliant. Because...
But also there's so much more on the platform. I think that's the other thing that people don't realise about it. You know, there are yoga teachers on there. There are people doing music lessons on there. There are skateboarders on there. So I think people just assume that, okay, well, you're going to join OnlyFans. You're going to be doing sexy images. But
this is the thing. This is what I automatically just presumed when it kind of came out. I just literally thought it was just kind of sexual images, porno, that kind of thing. Yeah. And you completely changed my kind of view on it.
Perception of it, yeah, completely.
So this is why this chat's so important. I've learned a lot, actually. Gosh, yeah, thank you so much for coming on, Sarah. It's been lovely to speak to you.
So nice to speak to you. And you're absolutely smashing life. And I think what you're doing is just incredible. So keep doing you as well. It's amazing.
Thank you.
I've got to say thank you, Sarah, for being so open with me and giving up her time amongst the chaos of everyday life with kids and a dog. You can listen to episode 2 of Superpower State of Mind with the fabulous Clemmie Telford right now. And please do follow or subscribe to the podcast so you never miss a future episode.